Hi, this is Lee Cantor with Stone Payton, another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. Welcome, Stone. We have an empty chair here today, the first time, I think, since we've begun this.
I know that our good buddy Lynn Hood with Cracker Jack Marketing and the person that has helped us get to know some new friends over at Metro Atlanta Chamber, she's playing hooky today. I don't know what the deal is.
I don't know. But we've got an exciting show.
This is going to be a fantastic show. We have with us from Tamnet Inc., Mr. Art Spalding. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We are delighted to have you. Tamnet, what are you guys out there doing for folks? What's the mission and purpose?
Well, Tamnet helps our biomedical manufacturers take advantage of opportunities and overcome obstacles presented by the federal government.
Are you telling
obstacles
me obstacles?
Government? I've never
government?
Heard those two words combined like that.
Believe it or not, there are one or two, especially when you're in a highly regulated industry.
So what's an example of some obstacles?
Well, of course, the major one that we'd be thinking about is the Food and Drug Administration and getting products cleared or approved,
right,
depending on the path that they have to take. So we help them with that regulatory strategy, tactics, how to overcome that.
Now, out of all the governments, are we the most difficult or challenging, most obstacles?
Well, the other area that one of the other areas Tamnet works in, we work in four, is reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to look at the complexity of reimbursement in the United States versus any place else in the world.
Are we winning there too?
Oh, big time. There's no contest. I mean, there's number one.
And everybody
and
else.
And way, way, way down the list is number two.
Really?
And the pace and volume of new technology, medical devices, that kind of thing, it's increasing. It's not going to slow down, right?
I would agree. The pace of new patents being issued is nothing but accelerating as long as they get issued. There are people asking for them.
Right, right.
And there are certain companies, just like anywhere else, as you know, the patent law changed last year where it's first to file. So many companies are filing all sorts of patents, whether they have anything in that space or not. They're trying to capture that idea. So for the small inventors, the garage or whatever, the lab someplace with a mom and pop shop, I would say it's getting to be more complex and more difficult for many of them.
Now, is there a strategy for them to be able to go to another, like to go to Europe or to another place in order to get stuff going?
Yes. Many of them do for a variety of reasons. Our legal environment and the regulatory environment here make it more expensive to do trials and things like that.
Right.
Eastern Europe is seeing a tremendous influx of this in drug trials. Russia will pay companies to do their trials there.
So are they attracting more and better quality companies there, or it's still everybody wants to be here?
Everybody wants to be here eventually. Mm-hmm. This is still the 800-pound gorilla if you get into this market.
Right. It's worth it
right.
to go through,
it's worth,
obviously.
Worth it going through it. They may start, though, in Europe. That's very common now.
So that way they can kind of see if there's something there, it's going to work or not, and they can get things to market and see if they're viable.
They can do that, and they can just, like you said, get them to market and start selling.
Right.
Start getting, becoming revenue positive.
Right. So then they're generating some revenue, and then that'll help them kind of bowl their way through America's regulations.
It'll give them the funding that
funding,
they can
right.
get and through ours.
And then it'll attract more funding because they've already got a viable product that's already selling.
Absolutely.
Right. So there's a strategy that incorporates doing things like that.
That's right. I mean, if we look at medical devices, which, of course, are near and dear to our hearts. At Tamnet, SEMDA is the Southeast Medical Device Association that we're a part of. Those medical device companies, to get a product cleared in Europe, you're looking at something equivalent to sort of like United Laboratories, you know, it doesn't electrocute anybody, that
right.
sort of thing. It's called a CE mark. It's an engineering file.
Right.
Now, it's not to belittle that. It's a major, you know, it might cost $40,000 or something to get a decent,
right.
depending on what your product is. But once you have that,
you're good
being
to
able
go.
To market in multiple countries in Europe becomes much easier.
Right.
Versus FDA, the same product, if it was a Class 3 product, would require clinical trials with, you know, tens to hundreds of patients.
So not only the money isn't the issue as much as the time it takes to go through all that.
Absolutely.
Right.
Time to market is always a critical factor.
So what does the engagement cycle, the relationship look like working with Tamnet? Lee and I come up with something in our garage, looks like it has a lot of promise, and we come to you. Walk us through that
process. You're our Sherpa?
Yes, your guide through the federal pathways. Well, as I mentioned earlier, we engage in four different areas. Mm-hmm. And opportunity is actually the first area. So if you have a great idea and you have maybe you've got an engineering firm or you are an engineer and you've come so far, now you're like, well, I need to test this idea. Where am I going to get funding to do that? Believe it or not, to use an old phrase, the government's here to help.
So on one hand, they're putting up obstacles. On the other hand, they're giving me money.
Well, they print it, you know.
Right, so they have it.
You know, last week there was a good report on the Federal Reserve being hacked by Anonymous. And they stole money. You know, and what's the government going to do? They're going to print more. But anyway, yeah, they definitely do. And many of the clients that we have don't really have any idea of how to navigate that pathway. But, for example, there's small business investigational research grants, right. SBIR grants or STTR if you're in a university. They have some restrictions, but it's real money. And recently the benefits of SBIR or STTR have become even greater. They're now allowing for the first time in a while corporately held small businesses. Now, you might say, well, that doesn't sound like a small business. But think about our legal environment and how people like to invest and insulate themselves from liability.
Sure.
So if you have an LLC for your investment activities, then that's a corporately held
investment. So then you meet that criteria, so you're good to go.
Well, it used to be a criteria that would keep you from being able to apply.
Right, but now you can.
Now, for 25% of all SBIR funds, you can at least seek them. Before it was zero.
Right.
So that's one change. And the other change is phase one of SBIR is now 300,000 instead of 150. Well, that's real coin. You can get a lot done with that money.
Now, do you find a lot of the time you're just kind of explaining, like the person that comes to you, they don't know what they don't know, right? They just
Correct.
Have these kind of preconceived.
They don't even know what to ask, probably in a lot of cases, right?
Absolutely. So we, you know, if they're at that early phase before they're even doing clinicals or near that, then SBIR, for example, is a great choice, and we can help them gain that.
So you become kind of their partner in this, that you can walk them through all the steps.
That's the ideal. Is that we do partner with clients for several years,
right? Because I would imagine this takes years.
It does. Minimum of 3 years, frequently between getting them the money from non-dilutive sources, so they still own their companies.
Right.
Getting the regulatory, getting a reimbursement assessment so that they have some idea of, well, gee, I've got a great idea. Will anybody ever pay for it?
Right. That's kind of important, too.
It is. And we've had multiple examples, without naming names, of large companies that have paid hundreds of millions of dollars here in Atlanta for a technology, and their sales force has gone out there.
And no one wanted it?
And then found out that no one would pay for it.
They'd like it if it was free.
Right. They would love it if someone else would pay it.
Right.
Well, you know, to reimbursement, somebody once described it, I thought very accurately, it's sort of like toy shopping.
Right.
You take your son or daughter or grandchildren toy shopping. Who picks out the toy?
The kid.
Who pays for the toy?
The grandparent.
You now understand U.S. healthcare.
Right.
And you and your doctor decide what you need, and you're expecting Aetna or
the
government to pay for it.
And so you probably play a therapist once you get into this relationship after a while, because you're going to have disappointments, you're going to have peaks and troughs and all of this. So you got to be able to a therapist is about as good an analogy as any, right?
Managing expectations is an important skill in your business.
I like managing expectations. I'm terribly underqualified to be a therapist.
Now, like, you could go, is this true? Like, you can say, oh, this sounds good, right? Because you can't tell them for sure this what's going to happen because you don't know, right? And you're going year one, year two, and everything's looking good. They got funding. Things are happening. At the end of the day, 3 years in, you can go, yeah, we couldn't, you know, the clinical trials are bad, or it could be totally, you lose, right?
It happens.
Wow, that must be a fun conversation, huh?
Well, managing expectations is a daily task. There's no doubt about it.
No kidding.
So there's throughout this process, there's kind of, you know, make or break moments, like milestones that are going to happen.
Absolutely. And there are other team members. I mean, Tamnet is one part of it, but there are many other team members. And of course, if a company engages in the community, something like SEMDA,
right,
they will meet other team members, whether it's an IP attorney. We have a potential client right now, and they haven't filed any patent yet. And I'm like, you know, as much as we want to help you, you really need to...
You got
to
button this up before we move on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's an order to things. You can't skip steps.
No, because someone else... I mean, I'm sorry. They will steal your technology. They will,
right.
You know, hey, that's a great idea. I'm glad it's not patented. Woo. You know.
So tell us more about SEMDA, because I think Lynn Hood may have accidentally mentioned SEMDA once or twice in previous
every week for 2 months.
Oh, sorry.
But for those
I was
who
told
haven't.
To make sure to. So.
No, tell us a little bit more about that organization, mission, purpose, and we know we have this event coming up. So let's get the skinny on SEMDA, but maybe just to begin with, start with your role in there.
Yeah, like
why you
what
guys
attracted
are involved,
you to it.
Yeah.
Well, the Southeastern Medical Device Association, of course, tries to meet the needs, and I think it does a pretty good job, of the medical device community here in the Southeast. Somewhat redundant, but anyway. My role in it this year is that I'm the chair of the annual meeting, which is coming up February 19th and 20th.
Right. And this is the 7th meeting? Or
that's right.
Right.
You've definitely heard
Man,
from
you've
Lynn.
Been listening.
I do a lot of research, a lot of prep time.
After 8 times with Lynn, you know exactly when it is.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's being held at the Georgia Learning Center, Georgia Tech Hotel, the 19th and 20th, and I'm chairing that. And this year, we've done some things that really do expand the tent, if you will, of the community. And the FDA helped us with that. Last April, they issued a nice memorandum around medical device data systems.
Right.
So, did you already hear about that?
Well, I believe it expanded what a medical device, or they changed the rules a little bit so that other things are under that umbrella now?
Some things have been for a long time, but I would say it clarified what is really exempt,
right,
and what is not. And many of the companies that may have thought they were exempt now understand they have the opportunity to engage with the Food and Drug Administration.
And they must be high-fiving each other at their office, right?
That and their lobbyists are calling Washington saying, you know, this opportunity is not what we asked for.
We need a re-clarification.
Exactly. So
you got this two-day format, and it mentions in the nice four-color brochure this one-to-one partnering. Speak to that a little bit.
Absolutely. Networking is a huge part of the benefit of being part of the community. And so when you register, you receive an email which gives you instructions on how to engage in the one-to-one partnering. And as you might expect, we have numerous breaks planned into the agenda, as well as, you know, some of the program sessions are going to be very engaging for you and interesting, and others you're like, I don't know. So it gives you a chance to plan meetings one-on-one with other attendees to the conference.
So it's like speed dating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
I mean, 20 minutes or so.
And then so how do you facilitate that? How do I know who else is going to be there?
Again, you get an email, you click on a link, you see who else is going to be there.
Oh,
and
so you
register.
Can say, hey, are you available and maybe schedule
exactly.
Some time?
Exactly. And your their calendar comes up and your calendar.
Oh, wow.
You can see each other's calendars.
That's pretty innovative.
For the meeting.
You came up with that? It sounds like pretty innovative.
Yeah, that was an art.
Yeah.
Now, are there other medical device associations around the country, or is the Southeast Medical Device Association kind of the main one?
There are definitely some, and some of them are a little larger and even better funded, believe it or not. Washington, believe it or not, has the largest, given the fact that it is a highly regulated
government.
Industry. Yes, exactly, and that's called AdvaMed.
Uh-huh.
And SEMDA has a cooperative agreement with AdvaMed, they are right now... they still represent usually the largest companies in the industry. You know, the Medtronics, the St. Jude's, those very, very large medical device companies.
Yeah, Medtronics, didn't the founder, didn't he come from here, the South? No? I thought he was a Georgia Tech person. No?
Forgive me, I don't know.
Come on, Art. But the Southeast is a prominent player in this, in the country, right?
They are, especially for devices, because of Georgia Tech and the real collaboration between, for example, Georgia Tech and Emory.
Mm-hmm.
So they
work together? Do universities not usually work together like that?
In my experience, not as well. Uh-huh. I used to live in Philadelphia, for example, and it's a wonderful city. It has more medical schools than any other city on earth. But, you know, until Drexel bought the old Hahnemann, whatever used to be, you know, there were a bunch of different owners of that particular medical school in the last 20 years. Until they bought it, there wasn't a single entity that had both capabilities in that city, for example. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if you look at the certificate of needs for the hospitals, I mean, you've got four pediatric hospitals in a city that size.
Sounds like a lot.
Versus Atlanta, where they merged.
Right. They all got together.
And, you know, a Scottish Rite merged, creating the largest children's hospital in the country.
And you think it's that better serves the community?
That's just in a personal opinion.
Yeah.
Yes. Versus people competing and building new MRIs everywhere. And,
right, so there's 40 of the
new
same
cardiac transplant units everywhere.
I guess it's better for the people who sell that machinery if there's a lot of them.
No comment, but when you think about the complexity of the treatments that are being given nowadays, every single time, the more that a group, a team does something, generally the better the outcomes. Mm-hmm. That's why a company like United Healthcare, if you are unfortunate enough to need a heart transplant or something like that, they will send you and your family to the Cleveland Clinic to have that done because the outcome is so much more predictable for them that the long-term costs are cheaper than having it done by the local whatever, you know, wherever you are.
So at this event on the 19th and 20th, there will be investors there that are genuinely looking for opportunities.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a big part of this thing, right?
Yeah, we've already gotten quite a few registered, which it seems like, well, gee, Art, it's only 12 days away. I would expect you to have a few registered. It's amazing how many people register at the last minute, especially in the investor community. But we are expecting 50 to 70 different investing companies to be there.
Have any of them expressed an interest in buying a radio network? You'll let us know, right?
Yeah, if that comes up, I'll be the first to call you.
But when you're attracting the investors, like, what would be a reason they wouldn't come here? It seems like this is a great opportunity to meet lots and lots of players in the industry.
Well, of course, their number one draw would be the quality of the companies that are going to present.
Right.
So at the conference, there's two tracks that run simultaneously. One's the regular program, used to be called educational, but since we're not certified education or anything like that, I mean, you'll learn stuff. But anyway.
There's like thought leadership track, and then you're going to use that?
Yeah, I like that. Thought leadership track. I like that.
So you have that track, but you also have a bunch of – they had to apply to present, right?
That's
like this
right.
This wasn't just a free-for-all thing.
Oh, no.
It just takes a number and they show up here, right?
In fact, we had more presenting company applications this year than ever before, and we have more slots this year, which is fortunate.
How many slots?
We're going to have 19 presenting companies this
19
year.
19 companies. So were you part of the committee that chose?
No. I'm very happy delegating.
You delegated that? So that must be a hard thing to do, is to choose who gets to present or not.
I'll bet.
Angela Sinton led that team, and I think they did a great job. They had some very high-quality companies, everything from those medical device data system companies like Azalea Healthcare is going to be presenting and is also a sponsor. So this is a company that's revenue positive. They're looking for investment in their next stage of growth.
Right.
And then we've got companies all the way down to, you know, we've got a great idea. We've just filed our patent, and we need that initial seed funding.
So, so then it's a whole variety. What does a presentation look like? Is it they have a lot of time, or is it kind of like we've been to some of these where you get 3 minutes, four slides?
Right. It's very structured.
Uh-huh.
The application is structured, and then the presentation is mentored, which is a real value.
Oh, so that's got to be huge. They're getting coaching on doing
on how to present?
Oh, wow, yeah. That's fantastic.
Not only on how to present, but the people mentoring them include CEOs or executives from medical device industry, as well as lawyers, as well as a investor. So they get all of those perspectives going into their mentoring, and that's going on right now.
That's almost as good as just presenting.
Yeah, everybody went
through that process.
No, everybody wins. It'd be great if they get funding there at the thing, but just to go through that process, that's, man.
Oh, it is, because these companies, you've heard of the roadshow or whatever. I mean, if they go anywhere else, they are so much better prepared for it. And you can see on the website, we've got a number of quotes from last year's presenting companies. I mean, at 7 years, obviously, we continue to evolve. Last year, we really notched it, you know, up quite a bit in the quality of the presenting companies because of this process, and we received feedback that verified that.
So now, anything that caught your eye, any disruptive stuff happening out there?
As a matter of fact, Tamnet tends to engage.
So you're the most disruptive?
With companies. And, but we're blessed to be able to choose who our clients are.
Right.
And we tend to engage with clients that do have what you might consider disruptive technology. Now, sometimes disruptive could be very minor, and other times it could be major. For example, historically, if we look at cardiac care, you're familiar with balloon angioplasty.
Sure.
Okay, very common procedure now. But when it first came out, when the first idea was out there, how do you think that was perceived by cardiothoracic surgeons?
They don't strike me as kind of early adopters of this kind of stuff.
Yeah. They saw it as disruptive, you might say.
Right. It might impact their bottom line of their practice.
Absolutely. And so it took over 3 years to get any sort of reimbursement for that because of the lobbying done by that group. Now, someone else may come on your show and disagree with me, and that's their prerogative. But it took an inordinate amount of time to get any sort of reimbursement for balloon angioplasty.
Even though that you had clinical trials that
even
showed
though
that
there were
it
clinicals.
Was...
Exactly. So whenever we're
that's
thinking...
That's a problem. No, if you have scientific proof that says that something
sounds
is
working,
good and,
yeah.
And it's helping people, and then another group can just say, no, we don't want it to exist because it's going to affect our bottom line, that's disruptive in a bad way.
Absolutely. And I think it's important for those new inventors, well, those inventors of new technologies to really think about following the money and where are the stakeholders in what they're proposing.
Right.
You know, you want to be aware before you enter the woods.
So now, what was the tipping point that allowed this balloon angioplasty thing to move forward? Like, what? It was just too much positive feedback and too much success that they couldn't just stop it anymore.
More and more research. Unfortunately, it was being funded by some pretty deep pockets.
Right. But if they didn't have that, it might have gone away and never...
Correct.
Never seen the light of day. Maybe that's a little scary.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, what's out there now that's in that category and needs Tamnet?
Right? Yeah, right.
Well, or Simda or something. You know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that is... So,
Well, that's why, I was given the background, actually, because we have clients that have that sort of technology, but... You know, the other thing that happens, for example, we have a monitor that monitors a certain output, not Tamnet, but one of our clients has this. It's a urinary output monitor, and it's electronic. So it can integrate into the electronic medical records. Well, there's no other monitor on the market today that does that. Mm-hmm. It came out of Israel, by the way. And what happened to the last company that had something like that? They were bought by a very large Georgia-based company, and that technology is off the market now.
Even though it works and stuff, but it would have negatively impacted that company, so they bought it and then...
I can't speak to that company's motives or anything else.
But no, it's like, who knows if it's true or not, but there are a great many of us who suspect some large automobile manufacturers may have found, you know, engines or carburetors that get 100 miles to the gallon, bought it, parked it. I mean, it's kind of...
Right. They can
that,
bury
right?
technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it happens in medical devices and presumably pharma as well.
Right. Now, is the Obamacare, is anything in that legislation impact the medical device world?
Well, the legislation itself was over 2,000 pages long.
So there might have been a paragraph or two?
Yeah, once they passed it, they had time to read it, I understand.
Right.
And upon reading it, they decided so far to issue over 15... No, is it? It's 15 or 30. Anyway, it's over 15,000 pages of new regulations since the passage of the bill. So
did they read this part of it? They're going to wait till later for that too.
Well, I mean, is it impacting? Mm-hmm. It will impact it in many ways. But
your job, you got to know this stuff, right?
Right.
Isn't that what your clients are paying you for?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you must read a lot. Or do you have
and any? I have a lot of good people on my team, thank gosh.
Or do they give it to you like a book on tape? Can you get the regulations as an audiobook? No?
I'm just imagining listening to Health and Human Services in my ears for hours on end. But they do have some good YouTube videos now. It's sort of funny that you mention it. They've issued
really?
Some. Oh, yeah,
that
yeah.
Cool.
I mean, Don Berwick issued a few when it first came out, and he's not there anymore, but... he did issue them initially, trying to explain how wonderful the new bill was and everything else. But, yeah, so the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act,
yes,
that we commonly refer to as Obamacare, has many provisions. One of them, you might have heard, they like preventive health care.
Yes.
So if you're a developer of a vaccine, for example, and the vaccine is deemed by the Centers for Disease Control to be beneficial, there's a group, ACIP, that looks at those things. I forget the exact meaning of that acronym, but anyway, they look at vaccines. And if they say, yeah, people should be getting this, well, then by law, your healthcare now has to pay for it, for example, once the law goes into effect, which we know is staged. So that's, you know, some people like the fact that their 25-year-old children still have healthcare and that they're one lobby that really likes it, and I think justifiably so, there's no lifetime limits on your on your benefits.
Right.
A group of people that is very large here in Atlanta that will benefit from that are the folks that are suffering from HIV. Because if you're taking, let's say your lifetime limit used to be $1 million, and you're on $60,000 worth of drugs a year.
That you're going to get there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're gonna and you know, people are living with HIV now, which is wonderful that, you know, they're not dying as they were when, you know, I was in school. So, but that's one of the groups that is really going to benefit from that. And, of course, cancer patients, a whole bunch. So, no lifetime limits.
Now, when you're when something like that comes out, I mean, this is obviously a huge piece of legislation that impacts things, and we don't even know what we don't know yet because it's so large. I would think that a company needs a firm like yours to help them through this. There's no way they can go about their day-to-day business of doing what they do with their device or whatever it is they're working on, plus keep track of all this stuff. I mean, how can you do that? It's overwhelming.
Especially if they don't have teams dedicated to that.
Right.
And so for our larger clients, they may see this as a possible opportunity. The Affordable Care Act, Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, has a provision in it creating accountable care organizations, for example. Now, I don't know if you all remember or paid attention to this, but we used to have capitated healthcare. So a group of doctors would say, okay, we will care for 100,000 patients here in Atlanta, and we will take, you know, $50 per member per month from Aetna or something like that. Aetna and Cigna both had this going on in Atlanta.
Right.
And most of those did not do very well, because this was back in the late 80s, early 90s. And frankly, I don't think they had the information systems to really understand where the patients were in that 100,000 that were going to really drive the cost.
Right.
And therefore, they couldn't reach them and treat them effectively and so forth. The hope, and we'll see, is that now they're reintroducing the same idea, only they're sharing risks. So if you do really well with your group of patients, your million patients that you're caring for, you'll get a little kicker at the end of the year. And if you do poorly, you won't get as much as you were supposed to get, and so forth. Those accountable care organizations, with current technologies, the electronic health record, just the databases that we have on what you're filling at your pharmacy and everything else, the hope is they will be able to manage that better and not only deliver better care, and they'll make a nickel or two.
Now, what about some companies do like kind of a self-funded insurance?
Absolutely.
You think that that's going to catch on more? Where that you know, they're going to take care of their people, basically. Like Whole Foods has.
Well, part of the Affordable Care Act says you can't change your benefits.
Right.
Or the co-chair of the employee. Well, the cost of healthcare isn't going down.
Right.
Yeah.
So that means suddenly all the employers, like, you know, any large employer you could name, generally are self-funded.
Right.
They just hire, you know, if you have a card that says some insurance company on there, what they're doing is they're processing claims. That's all they're doing. Your employer is actually paying all of the claims.
Right.
Versus if you're a small company and you go with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Georgia or WellPoint, whatever, they're taking the risk. If somebody in your company gets really sick, your little tiny company isn't bearing that risk.
Right. But in a self-funded...
They're bearing the risk.
Right. They're funding whatever that procedure is.
But with the Affordable Care Act, I mean, honestly, I think that More and more companies will decide over time to stop providing health care benefits.
And just pay the penalty and then let it be the government's problem.
I mean, with the average person being $16,000 a year for health insurance or something like that, $2,500, that's nothing.
That's the penalty, right?
Right.
The penalty is $2,500 per. So you do the
math. That's just math,
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's what they want. The government wants it anyway, is to get moved to that.
Now, I don't know how political the show is, so I'm not disagreeing. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Now, we talked about this. Navigating all this is certainly overwhelming for the inventor. But there's also – it must be a mindset or a point of focus that is important for an inventor to follow if they're going to make it through this at all. They got to – I don't know. They got to follow the money. They got to really. What's your overarching counsel to the inventor, medical device maker community as they just approach this kind of thing?
Number one, don't believe you can do everything yourself.
So some people think they can do, like, it's a do-it-yourself project. I mean, really?
They're really bright people. I mean, you know, to come up with these ideas.
Right.
Many of them have, you know, doctorals in either some sort of engineering, or they're medical doctors or whatever. And, you know, they're very smart people. I oftentimes say I'm not going to be the smartest guy in the room.
Right.
That's okay. But I can get a team together that will help them. So if they believe that, and there are two things that lead into that belief. Number one, they've done it before.
Right.
Everything they've ever tried, they've succeeded at. So they're like, well, I can figure out reimbursement.
How hard can it be?
I can figure out regulatory. You know, I mean, that guy's not as smart as I'm. No, I'm not even going to argue.
Right.
That's, you know, that's not the issue. The issue is it took me 20 years to get to where I am. You know, and they may get there in 5. Well, do you want to delay your launch 5 years?
Right. Exactly.
That's the time to market is why you bring in additional resources. That's why you hire someone that's a business person, not TAMNET. I'm saying full time, have somebody dedicated to your company and what it's doing.
Right.
We have a client right now, as a matter of fact, that we've helped create their first sales. That's another part of what TAMNET does, is help them sell into the government, because the VA, you might realize, has 153 medical centers in this country.
Right. There might be a market there.
They treat some patients and they don't care about reimbursement. They're not billing Aetna or United Healthcare or Cigna or whatever for what they're doing. You know, they're getting it out of tax dollars. Department of Defense. You know, we've got 500,000 active, you know, plus
numbers start adding up.
Yeah. It's not a huge market. It's only a couple points out of the whole U.S. population. But for a small device maker.
Right. That's huge.
Huge.
Now, do you find yourself like, who's your constituency that you want to work more with? These device people, or do you work with investors more? Like, does an investor ever say, you know what, we need you to come in here because we got somebody that's really struggling? Is that a path for clients for you?
It actually is. It's a great question. And not only that, but before they decide to invest.
Right. Do you take a look at this, you know?
They'll ask us to do a reimbursement assessment, for example.
Because that's what I wanted to know before I got started.
Yeah. It's part of their due diligence.
End? Right.
Absolutely. They want to make sure that, you know, okay, there's a regulatory pathway, there's a reimbursement pathway, and that if we invest, you know, we can expect these milestones in a certain – I mean, you know, investing's all about risk management.
Right. And it sounds like, you know, with your expertise that you can really help them out in this area.
We do. We are engaged by a couple of different investment – you know, companies, and they've been a great source.
So you work both sides. You got the inventor or the people developing the technology, plus you have the people investing in the technology as well.
Absolutely. And some of those investors actually have incubators. So they might have 12 companies at a time in their incubator.
And that are all, do they typically have incubators on, like, just healthcare
yes.
IT, things like that?
Yeah, well, it might not be healthcare IT, but it might be medical devices
Wow.
Or something like that.
So, like, then to engage with you, that's really helping, because now they have a multiplier effect of there's 12 of them there that you can kind of get the lay of the land to see which ones are the ones that have potential or there's a path to reimbursement.
Well, and they're all going to be at different stages,
right?
So we can help them at various stages. Maybe they need that SBIR grant to get started.
Right.
Well, gee, investors love having free money in their investments.
So is that one of the things you're doing as part of your marketing, is pursuing these investor relationships?
Yes. I mean, most of our clients come word of mouth.
Just directly from as the inventor or the developer of the technology?
Well, we do some speaking like we're doing today.
Right.
We present at various associations, American Israeli Chamber, SEMDA, Georgia Bio, and so forth, and people learn about us and, seek our services as they need them.
Are clients typically here in Atlanta, or are there anywhere in the world?
We have clients from Israel, the United Kingdom, Michigan. I hear that things are imported from there now. I'm
right, yes.
Not 100% clear on that. But Georgia, So, yeah, our clients are all over.
All over the place. Good stuff. So if somebody wants to learn more about your company, is there a website?
There is, www.tammnet.com, and that's T-A-M-M-N-E-T.
And then on the website, there's white papers. There's a lot of information.
There's some information, yes, and there's certainly a way to learn more about us, and I'll be glad to respond to
you. And probably a good radio interview.
Yeah,
all
kinds
of good stuff on there, right?
And then if they want to chat with you, I'm sure they can go to the SEMDA conference and see you there.
We will be there for sure.
That's February 19th and 20th, and you can learn more about that at semda.net/conference, and that's at the Georgia Tech Global Learning Center. All right. Well, thank you very much, Art. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Disruptive Healthcare.